Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. St. Louis already has a major reputation as a center for plant sciences thanks to the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center. Now there are efforts to grow that base. More on that a little bit later. But first, at maybe 2 to 5% of population, the transgender community is not large, but the issues that confront it are. These issues will get a full airing at a two-day conference on the subject at UMSL tomorrow and Saturday. We'll take a look at the issues and the conference on today's program on this, the Transgender Day of Remembrance. With me in studio is Joel Baum, Senior Director of Professional Development and Family Services at Gender Spectrum in California. He's the keynote speaker at the conference. Laura Pierce and Sarah Johnson identify themselves as transgender. Sarah is board president of the Metro Trans Umbrella Group. Lori Copeland is the parent of a transgender youth and co-founder of the organization Transparent. Thank you all so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
We have a crowded table here today, and that's good. Joel, let me begin with you. This is an issue that has not gotten an awful lot of public discussion until relatively recently. Why is that? Why is the conversation now opening up?
Well, I think there's several factors that are contributing to the newfound attention that we're seeing. I think in part we have a society that is becoming more accepting of differences in lots of different ways. I would say more than anything, though, this is something that young people in many ways are leading the way. We have young people who are basically saying to the adults around them, don't put me in the boxes that you assume I should be in. These young people are becoming connected with one another through the internet and through other sources of information and being raised by a growing number of families who are trying to understand their kids' experiences and support them.
Young people are much more progressive and much more understanding today than they have been in recent generations, needless to say.
Yeah, I think that's probably true across the generations. But I think what we're seeing in sort of a unprecedented way is a level of acceptance that young people, when they see their peers being authentic, it resonates for them.
Well, another thing that a lot of people have seen just recently is Laverne Cox on Orange is the New Black, which opened up a lot of eyes, I think, and really got part of the dialogue going. You think so?
Yeah, I think, you know, any of the public figures that we see that are expressing a gender-expansive sense of self go a long way towards creating space for everyone, whether it's Laverne Cox or Jazz Jennings or Nicole Maines, individuals across the country that are basically saying there's lots of ways to do this thing called gender.
Yeah. Sarah, let me take the conversation to you now. What does this new open discussion mean to you?
Well, it means that there's possibility models now for folks. When I was coming out in my early 30s, I didn't know any trans people. I didn't meet my first real life trans person until I was 35 years old. So I think having possibility models would have changed the course of my experience. When I came out as a lesbian at 16, I got to go to gay pride. When I came out as a transgender man at 35, I couldn't find community.
Give me some sense of what life was like before coming out.
Before, you know, I've had a full life. It's been a good life. But there was always a part of me that wasn't being acknowledged and wasn't feeling empowered. Before transition, I felt like I couldn't take up my space. And now I sort of unapologetically take up my space.
Life is better for you.
Life is better. I feel lined up.
Yeah. Laura, let me put the same question to you.
Well, I transitioned relatively recently. And growing up as a child in the 1950s, I had these feelings that I knew something just was not correct, but I didn't dare say anything. And more recently, as we talk about young people, I've been a teacher for all of my career, and all of that time, well, much of it I presented as male. My former elementary students, who are now friends on Facebook, are fully accepting and encouraging. And I'm finding that the younger children, the 4- and 5-year-olds who are now exerting their true gender and how they want to be treated, are role models for people like me. Older folks who have lived with this, and now we see that even children can show us how to make it a public thing.
You don't look like you're old enough to go back to the 50s, but I'll take your word for it.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, the reason I say that is because I'm old enough to go back to the 50s, and I remember Christine Jorgensen.
Yes.
And that, what a sensational story that was. She had gone to Denmark for a sex change operation. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. And when I first heard about her, there was such hope. This may be something that is not beyond our grasp. But I still I was running a race, keeping this secret to myself, a race with death, and my hope was to someday grow old and die with no one knowing. And I just couldn't go on. It was exhausting.
Liberating?
Oh, liberating. Since my transition has been wonderful. No secrets. And I'm living as I felt I always should be living.
Yeah. Laurie Copeland, you come at this from a much different angle. You're the mother of a trans child. Tell me about that experience from your perspective.
It is quite different from Laura and Sayers in that our child was 2.5 and told us God made him wrong. And there wasn't a lot of information at the time, but certainly much more than in their time. And we slowly found help with the internet and support groups. And we ended up starting our own support group here in St. Louis 3 years ago. We found 80 families now who have found us over that period of time who all are in the same situation with very young children. And what's so different for these kids is they don't have to spend all those years in the wrong body. And there is medical intervention for kids before they ever even hit puberty.
By medical intervention, are you talking about surgery?
No, I'm talking about blockers that prevent the children from going through the puberty of their born gender. So they don't get characteristics that they don't want as an adult.
Your reaction to the announcement from your 2.5-year-old, your reaction to that?
Shocking.
Yeah.
Too young, doesn't know.
A phase.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It took us a while. We did a very long and drawn-out transition, and in fact, our child was known as Grace until he left for school this August, and now he's Will and doing great, but it was a very long, you know, we're in the Midwest, and there's not a lot of support here, so we're working on that.
Yeah. Joel, back to you with regard to some of the issues that are going to be taken up at the conference. Going through the list of possibilities, it's quite a long list, is it not, that these people face?
Yeah, the program, I think, speaks to many of the issues that transgender people and other gender expansive people face as they try to navigate a very binary society that doesn't necessarily create a lot of space for anything outside of that male-female binary. And I think what I'm hearing in all three of these narratives that were just shared is how critical it is to have the sense of possibility and the sense of community that comes when you're able to meet other people that are having similar experiences. Our organization, Gender Spectrum, works with so many families across the country. And, you know, Lori's experience is one that we hear quite often. And I think it's important for your audience to know families don't come to this place easily. It's not something that parents are doing because they have an agenda or because they're looking for attention. Many of the families we work with often explore every other avenue before finally listening to their child who's really just articulating a sense of self that maybe the family isn't necessarily ready for. But what we're finding is, as Sayer and Laura talked about, the sense of liberation for a family to see a child smiling and being their full selves when perhaps you had a child who was withdrawn and sullen is pretty convincing.
Lori, you were nodding as Joel was talking there about what you were going through, but you seem, in talking about it now, very much at ease and comfortable talking about it.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
15 years that I've been dealing with it. Definitely some major low times, difficult, scary. You know, when you have a child, you have expectations for their future and you look ahead. And when it's changed, I tend to look at the worst case scenario and things that you hear in the news and the fears of our child not being accepted or bullying or worse.
Yeah.
We were very fortunate. None of those things ever occurred.
Your husband react the same way?
Interestingly, I have found that in our organization, when there's a mom and a dad, often the father is about 6 months behind the mother. But they almost always get there.
Well, I would say that's the case in most things.
Yes.
Certainly, that certainly has been my experience. Now let me return to Sayer and to Laura. You know, we talked about the liberating aspect of all of this. But this comes at a price, does it not? I mean, during the times that you were dealing with this and the issues that you had mentioned earlier, and what Joel has said, people can react in a very hostile, awful way. Did you go through any of that, and how did you deal with it if you did?
In my narrative, I was really fortunate. I had a lot of love around me. I had a lot of support. But I know that that's not the case in a lot of folks' journeys. Today, it happens to be the Transgender Day of Remembrance, where we honor folks that have been murdered for being their authentic selves. So I think that that speaks to our community and folks not being welcomed in the space that they take up. But in my life, I've been really fortunate. And I feel like with that fortunate, I want to give back to my community and support because I come from such a loving space.
One of the things, Laura, that I've noticed, detected, or sensed through all of this is that when people react negatively, it's often in a violent way, which may not be the same for other groups.
That is interesting. I have not experienced that myself. But as far as the response of others, I was 55 years old. I had 3 grown children, grandchildren. I was married. And I had lived with this all my life. For them, it was a total shock. It came from nowhere. So I've lost several of my grandchildren who I can no longer see. But slowly, 2 of my 3 grown children are returning. And I have one grandson who has never known me any other way. Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing this change in our societal expectations. We have children who are transitioning very young, and we have young children who are seeing their grandparents transition. So the whole definition of what it means to be this gender or that gender is changing. And children especially are taking this rather well, if their parents let them.
You know, one of the things that I've learned from this journey is we've done a lot of educating in schools, public, private, grade schools. It's not just about being transgender, because very few people are, but many, many children don't fit into the stereotypical complete boy, rough and tumble, or girl, prissy. And I think it's really important that educators learn to let children have that freedom to express themselves. It doesn't mean they're gay. It doesn't mean they're trans. It means they're human. And they should be allowed to have those experiences without the bullying.
Joel, much of what's going on at the conference is focused toward educators. That I find a little surprising, too. I might have thought it might go more to parents and family members and that sort of thing.
Yeah, as one of the socializing institutions in our country, schools play a tremendous role in helping to create conditions where, as Lori said, every child's gender is celebrated. And I really want to emphasize what she said. This is not about certain kids. This is about every one of our children. We all have a gender story. Every one of us is impacted by expectations around gender that limit us. And in this age where we're facing so many challenges as a society, we cannot afford to be letting kids feel that there are things not available to them, opportunities, skills that they can develop simply because of this thing called gender that we've defined so narrowly. So educators are doing a tremendous amount of work in this area, and organizations like ours and others are really finding some really effective ways to support schools to be more gender inclusive of every child. I think we have to be very careful in pointing towards this issue as an issue that's about others. In fact, it's about all of us.
Yeah. I have to take a break now. We'll continue our conversation. We're talking about the transgender world. We'll continue that conversation. There is a conference taking place at the University of Missouri St. Louis this weekend, which will be dealing with many issues confronting those in the transgender community. Back to our conversation in just a moment. Joel Baum, you just heard from. He joins us from California. He's with an organization called Gender Spectrum. Laura Pierce and Sarah Johnson are with us in studio. They identify themselves as transgender. And Lori Copeland also with us. She's the parent of a transgender youth and co-founder of an organization called Transparent. Back in just a moment to continue the conversation. And if you'd like to get in on it, do so at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation on the transgender world in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Mercy Hospital in Jefferson County is evaluating a patient for a possible case of Ebola. The patient is considered low risk and has been isolated in a facility separate from the main hospital, according to a spokesman. A new report will be released later today on the economic impact of the military and the defense industry in Illinois. It will include a look at the role of Scott Air Force Base near Belleville. And Monsanto-owned Climate Corporation has signed onto an agreement that sets industry standards for the protection and use of data it collects through its precision agriculture products. These devices use climate, soil, and other data to help farmers decide on when to plant, fertilize, and when to harvest their crops. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to the subject at hand with my guests in studio, Joel Baum, Laura Pierce, Sarah Johnson, and Lori Copeland. Joel, let me come back to you with regard to the legal protections, I guess is the way to put it, that people in the transgender community might need. What's out there for them?
Well, it's an evolving landscape, to be sure. I think what was we talked about some of the violence that transgender individuals have encountered. We know that transgender people face great discrimination in the workplace, in schools, in housing, and in many different avenues of their lives. And what we're finding is finally recognition of that. And in various places, legal protections are being created. Schools now have gender identity and gender expression protected in about 20 states, as well as about 160 major metropolitan areas. Well over half of the country is living in areas where gender is protected in the schools. However, protection is different from creating the space where it's safe. What we know in these laws is they're responsive to, or reactive, I should say, to situations rather than proactively creating accepting conditions for everyone. But it is a changing legal landscape, and in particular the area where we do a lot of work with education, schools are learning. They need to be making sure it's safe for every child regardless of their gender.
Lori, does Grace allude to this part of the situation?
We were really, really fortunate that our child was not ever bullied or treated poorly. The school was very supportive. I kind of suspect that part of the reason is our child was female wanting to be male. And in our society, there's nothing wrong with that.
So I have it backwards. It's Will now and
it's
it was
Will
Grace.
Now, yes.
Okay,
I think that it's much harder for kids who are born male and identify as female. In our society generally, that's not okay. That's a sissy. Yeah. But if you're a tomboy, that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. So we were lucky.
Laura, you're nodding and smiling.
There is that interesting situation where for a boy growing up knowing that he's not really a boy. He identifies as female. I can see how, you know, bullying is a huge issue across many areas. But this in particular, I think the transgender child is quite vulnerable. And so as you alluded to earlier, bullying laws and policies in schools are crucial for the safety of these kids.
Sarah, want to comment on that?
Well, and I can attest to the backpack of privilege that I've received by being read as male all the time. Being read as a butch female was much more challenging. And I do know from my trans sisters that there's a lot of discrimination that they face. But I can tell you the many tales of being able to be in safe in places where I was not safe before.
You know, one thing I don't fully understand, and you can help in this, and perhaps our listeners feel the same way. What was going on with you, Sarah, and I'll put the same to you, Laura, when you say you don't identify as one sex or the other, what do you precisely mean by that? What was going on mentally to cause you to feel that way?
Well, I just always felt masculine. It wasn't necessarily that I felt male. I felt masculine. I just did not feel feminine. I felt like that was just not correct. And I didn't have any models that were saying, well, this is an option. So I just settled into tomboy and settled into a little left of feminine. But I just didn't feel feminine. I felt masculine.
I worked very hard as playing the part of a man. And I think it's important for the listeners to realize we don't choose our gender. Mm. And there's a difference between gender and sex. You know, gender is our deeply felt feeling of who we are and how we are. And I did not choose that, nor would I if I had the choice. This has been a very difficult road to travel. So it's been hardwired in. And at first, I fought for a really, really long time until finally I stopped fighting, as you did too.
Yeah.
And
Laura, you made a good point there about how hard it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people who question families who allow young children to transition need to understand that it is so important for these kids to do this. And there's no good payoff. There's really backlash from everyone for doing this. So there's proof it's really...
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say two things. I think there is a payoff, which is a happy child.
Right.
We see that.
Right.
And I think in terms of people's difficulties with conceiving what this is about, most people are born of a certain sex, and that sex lines up with who they know themselves to be, and therefore never have to question that and, in fact, encounter a world designed for them. It's only when we have a variation of that experience that we see situations like we're talking about today. And again, Sayer mentioned the word privilege. There's a great deal of privilege of having to never question who you are because the world is affirming that. But that's just not the case for everyone. Again, this work is about all of us in gender. Some of us have a more what's called aligned or cisgender experience, and others don't. And we just need to create room for everyone's reality.
Another thing I'd like to explore in the limited time that we have left is the word transition has come up several times here. I understand the word. And Sarah, I'll start with you and go around the table. Tell me about this transition. Is this something that happens like walking through a door, or is it something that is a long evolutionary process? What is the transition period like?
I think it's very individualized. It depends on the human being and the journey that they're going on. Some folks transition socially, some medically, some emotionally. It's a journey. For me, the way that I see it, it's a journey.
Right. Over a period of time. How long a period of time in your case?
Well, I'm 42 years old, so I'll say 42 years.
I'll be darned. Mark?
And transition is it's a way we perceive ourselves. It's also a way that others perceive us. I think that for me it was a long process. I knew what I wanted to do, what I needed to do, but there were so many messages being sent to me not to do it, to avoid it. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that the pain of staying who I was exceeded by not being who I was, I took that difficult path, and the transition was a long journey. I mean, to go from passing as a male in our society, which is a very dichotomous society as far as gender is concerned, and be able to work as a woman, that was not easy.
Did you make this journey alone, or did you talk to people? Did you have conversations about it? Were you all by yourself on this?
I did go through some work with counselors, mm-hmm. who ushered me down the path. And they told me that I could go as far or as little as I wanted to go. And I think the good advice that people are hearing is that you don't need to be totally male or totally female presentation-wise. There are areas in between that are becoming more and more acceptable. And it's an individual journey, and we have to decide for ourselves where it takes us.
And Lori, in Will's case, was it a fast transition?
No, it was quite slow. But fortunately, we did get him on the blocker, so he never developed, say, breasts, won't ever have to have chest surgery, which is huge for these kids. It's expensive, and insurance generally doesn't pay for it. Started on testosterone. As far as surgeries in the future, may or may not do those as well.
Joel, that's an issue that I wanted to get to, but apparently it's not one that is that overwhelms this community, that a sex change operation, if I can use that term, is relatively rare, or am I mistaken on that?
Well, I think there's a number of factors which go into an individual's decisions as to how they want to modify their body in terms of their transition. There are certainly economic issues, there's medical issues, and perhaps increasingly issues of I will define for myself what gender means and therefore whether or whether not my body needs to quote-unquote align with that. I also want to say one other thing about transition, which is, of course, there are a number of tangible steps, whether it's requests of pronouns being changed, new names, new identity documents, etc. But I also want to share just quickly a story of a young man I talked to who was on a panel, a transgender man, talking about his experience. And someone asked him, well, when did you transition? And he looked everyone in the eye and said, oh, I've never transitioned. I've always been who I am. It's all of you that need to transition and catch up with me.
That is a very interesting way to put it, needless to say. May I ask you, Sarah and Laura, about the idea of surgery? Is this something you've considered, done, want to do?
You know, that's a medical thing that I've had the opportunity to pursue. But really, you know, it's personal like any sort of medical decision. It's incredibly expensive. There's a lot of barriers involved in surgery for folks.
And there's nothing magic about the surgery. We are who we are before we talk to the surgeon, and we're still that same person afterward.
Would it make any difference to have the surgery?
I think for some people, it makes a huge difference. And for others, it's irrelevant. It doesn't define us.
That's not the most important part of this transition.
Definitely
that we've been
not.
Talking about.
No.
Well, let me come back to the conference because our time is getting away. Joel, you're going to be the keynote speaker. What's your message going to be?
Well, really, the message is one about gender being about all of us, that we all have a stake in creating greater levels of acceptance for everyone to be themselves. That's going to be the focus. And then I'm also going to be doing a session specifically on gender-inclusive practices in schools.
We'll have information on the conference on our website. I should point out you've indicated, someone at the table has indicated, that you're all sold out for Friday's first session, which is, I'm sure, very good news to everybody that there's so much interest in that. Saturday, not so much. But are you asking people who are just interested in the subject to show up on Saturday if they'd like?
Yes. I think it's a great opportunity for providers in our area to come out and get educated.
Providers being?
Medical providers, school teachers, school administrative, anybody who engages with transgender people in their life, it's an opportunity to come out and be educated.
All right. Well, the information on the conference is this. The conference is called Trans Youth and Adults, Allies and Families, Academics, Health Professionals, and Policymakers. The conference on trans youth, as I had indicated, takes place tomorrow and Saturday at UMSL's J.C. Penney Conference Center. And I'm sure most of the people here at the table are going to be involved in that conference. Joel Baum, I want to thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Laura Pierce and Sarah Johnson, thank you for being with us. Laurie Copeland, it's been a pleasure meeting you. Good luck to Will.
Thank you.
I hope he's getting along well in Tulane. What a place to go to school.
He's happy.
New Orleans, not bad. Thank you all so much for being with us. Good luck at the conference. When we come back, a look at plant science and why it's important to St. Louis. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.